The Urban Evolution Podcast is brought to you by Destination Medical Center, creating the global destination for health and wellness in Rochester, Minnesota. More at dmc.mn.
All of a sudden, it was getting pretty slow around here. And we're talking among ourselves and saying, okay, this is serious. This is not going to be something that goes away quickly. You know, our friends in Europe were saying that this is major. And none of us had ever lived through anything like this before.
And we had just taken delivery of all of our spring shipments. We had rain gear from Helly Hansen and new Dale of Norway sweaters. And all of a sudden, we had a store full of beautiful new merchandise and no customers.
No customers.
Welcome to Urban Evolution, a podcast about harnessing creativity and innovation to transform communities. I'm your host, Bill Von Bank. A Scandinavian retailer in Rochester, Minnesota is proof that you can be successful during a pandemic. The Nordic Shop has seen a nearly 300% growth in its online sales in 2020, thanks to a robust digital strategy, a keen understanding of its customer base, and a forewarning of the impact of COVID by its European vendors. Today, I'm joined by Louise and Walter Hansen, who own and operate the Nordic Shop and are celebrating 47 years in business and in marriage. Louise and Walter Hansen, welcome to the Urban Evolution Podcast.
Thank you very much. We are very happy to be here.
Yeah, it's kind of an honor to be here.
Louise, let's start with you. Can you take us back to 1974 and the beginning of the Nordic Shop in Rochester, Minnesota? Tell us why the Nordic Shop in terms of product, and tell us why Rochester, Minnesota.
I am from the area. I'm from Blooming Prairie, which is a tiny town just west of here. And I grew up with a very Scandinavian Norwegian family who cooked the food and celebrated the holidays in a specific Scandinavian way. I decided to take a little pivot even back then and go to Lindenwood University in St. Charles, Missouri for my further education. I majored in communication and art. I wanted to meet other people, live in a new place, and grow in a different way. My junior year, I went to Copenhagen, which was wonderful.
Is that life-changing?
It was life-changing. I studied Danish design and heritage, and I had a renewed interest in Scandinavia. And after that, I think that's partly why we decided to come back to our Scandinavian roots when I met Walter and start a shop. And Rochester, Minnesota was the place that we decided to come back to.
Walter, when did you and Louise meet?
We met on a blind date.
It's been how many years?
Well, since 1972 till now. We got married in 1974 when we launched the store. What was interesting about selecting Rochester, back to your question, was that Louise had a familiarity with the area, but we were really looking to try to find where one would be able to set up a store that would feature the best of Scandinavian design, because that's kind of what we were interested in. We weren't interested in selling products that said, kiss the cook, she's Norwegian, or, selling oof to joke books or things like that, which at
plenty
the time,
of places have those.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And back in those days, there was a Scandinavian shop in every strip mall in the upper Midwest.
And every small town as well.
Especially in Minnesota, given the heritage.
Yes.
Yeah. So, one had to be different. And we decided early that if we were going to try a store concept, it was going to be something totally different that focused on the best of Scandinavian design and the best of Scandinavian craftsmanship. So those were the lines that we went after. And back in those days, we were in our early 20s. people kind of looked at us a little strange. You know, it's like two little kids starting a store. Okay.
Well, you survived 47 years.
Mm-hmm. We have.
If I do my math correctly, 1974, and right now we're in 2021. Amazing.
February 21st was our first day of operation.
It was.
Tell us a bit about your customer base. And I'm just wondering, has it evolved? Has it changed? Is it still changing?
You know, it's been an ever-evolving mix. You know, we've identified that there are three separate components to what we call our Mayo and our Rochester base. There's the local customer who's within, a short drive of Rochester, all the bedroom communities. Then there's the area, which is kind of, you know, our demographic trade area where we do draw people from northern Iowa, from, you know, western Wisconsin along the river. We draw people from up, you know, all the way up to the cities, to the store. And to the west, as far pretty much as you want to go. And that's what we call, you know, our area. And then after that, then it's our Mayo patients. So those have always been very important to us. And we've always wanted to make sure that we played to all of the groups at the times that were appropriate. We had limited budgets for advertising, and it's been something that seems to never change. And so you had to be very targeted. We identified early, thankfully, that the Mayo Clinic component, those people way back in 1974 were here for a week at a time, usually two weekends and the full week in between. And then you wouldn't see them for a year or some in 6 months, whatever, but mostly a year. And so it was like very early on that we decided that, you know, we wanted to be able to keep track of them. So back in those days, there were no computer programs that were available for small businesses to maintain a mailing base. So we actually wrote our own. I can remember when we first started, you know, we kind of looked at the computer and said, okay.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Louise, question for you.
Yeah.
You've always been in Rochester. You've always been downtown Rochester with this business.
We have had a few satellites over the years, which were great learning opportunities, but obviously we're not long-term investments. So we have come back to Rochester every
time. Well, we never left downtown.
Right.
We did have two satellites, as Louise said. Our first one was Apache Mall, and we had a little store in the middle of Apache Mall.
In Rochester.
Kiosk. Just a kiosk.
Because everybody kept saying, you know, all of our advisors and that kept saying, well, you know, you got to be out at Apache Mall. You've got to, you know, that's where all the people are. And, you know, it was like, okay, well, we'll try it. Well, it's a great place, and we were busier than heck on the weekends. And then after that, you could have a bowling alley during the week there. And it was just not for us. So at the end of the lease, we just said, thank you and no, and we're back downtown. Then, you know, after a while, we had been around 80, 82. I believe we opened a store in the Hyatt up in the cities.
In the Minneapolis-St. Paul area.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right on Nicollet Mall, right on the Greenway. Yep. Because
again, it was the biggest convention hotel in the city at the time, right. And our advisors, people in the business said, "Oh, you've got to be in Minneapolis because you're selling all of these exclusive brands, and that's where the people are." So again, we tried it.
Yeah, and we had kind of done our homework. We'd looked at our database. We had all the data. We knew we had lots of customers, and we actually had a lot of customers right on the Greenway. So it was like, okay, well, this is kind of a natural. And so we tried that only to end up with that customer who we had in the cities was very busy, usually dual professionals, and they didn't have the time to shop. They might walk by the front of our store and wave. And if we were there, one of us was there, we would recognize them, but they wouldn't stop.
They wouldn't buy.
No. However, they'd pick up a phone and they'd place a phone order downtown here in Rochester, and they'd ship it up to the cities to them. And I remember answering a lot of those calls and saying, well, it's right there in the store. I know you walk by it every day, twice a day. It's like, well, it's a lot easier. Just send it to me. Send it to my office. Send it to my condo, whatever. You know, it was like, okay, we have proved to ourselves we do not need to be in multiple places. We just need to be able to get to the people in those multiple places. So we started growing mail order probably for our third time at that point when we closed that store.
Which was the best way to connect with our customer, who was beginning to become from all over the world.
And building loyalty.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. One of the happy surprises of being in downtown Rochester is the connections we have to our medical tourists. And they come in often whenever they're in town. And it's fun to see them, fun to help them find what they would like and help them and catch up with them personally.
And given your location, you have a great Skyway connection to them. And that must be important.
It's very important. It's very important.
In these days, it is.
Yeah, our landlord, the late Gus Schifolius, was very smart in designing the building, which was going to be connected to the major hotels and all of the Mayo Clinic buildings and some of the other outlying areas within Rochester downtown. And that has been a great benefit to both us as retailers, the restaurants, and also all of our Mayo Clinic workers and visitors.
The history is very interesting, and thank you for that. And I envision we'll talk a little bit more about your history and maybe a few stories along the way. I do want to get to the here and now a bit, because we've had a pretty challenging 12 months with the COVID-19 pandemic. And in a recent news article I read, you shared that your European vendors gave you a forewarning of the impact that COVID would eventually have on U.S. retail. Tell us how, armed with that information, you prepared to weather the challenges that the pandemic inflicted.
We were fortunate, you know, as you said, all of our vendors are in Europe, and we have strong ties to them after all these years. You know, people like Dale of Norway, they know us, and we talk a lot. And other smaller vendors, Oleana, some of our other small vendors, and even Helly Hansen, it's based in Oslo. You know, those people we talk to on a regular basis. They were getting very nervous about the fact that Central Europe was closing down. Italy closed down, I think, first. Then it was just a domino effect as it moved north. And they were very, very, very visibly shaken that that was occurring. And they were wondering what the United States was doing. And at that time, we were saying things like, oh, you know, it's kind of like the flu. It'll be gone in no time. This is nothing to worry about. It was something to worry about. And we looked at it. Mm-hmm. And in February, you started seeing a decreased number of people traveling to Mayo. And all of a sudden, it was getting pretty slow around here. And we're talking among ourselves and saying, okay, this is serious. This is not going to be something that goes away quickly. You know, our friends in Europe were saying that this is major. And none of us had ever lived through anything like this before.
And we had just taken delivery of all of our spring shipments. We had rain gear from Helly Hansen and new Dale of Norway sweaters. And all of a sudden, we had a store full of beautiful new merchandise and no customers.
No customers.
So as you fast forward and we start to realize the impact of this, what did you do?
We really actually, back in February, the end of February, we were talking between us about what we should do. And we decided that, you know, we had a fairly big budget for the year for our marketing to the male patients and things like that. If they're not going to be around, why spend that money? Let's repurpose that money and let's start putting some of that into expanding again our market and our footprint for our digital side of our business, which is the web these days. Right. Way back in early days, that was mail order.
I think the efforts were almost twofold. First of all, we had to set up the store, which the website. We have a very active website. The website is maybe almost 20 years old now. But
it's about as old as the internet.
That is true. So we had to put all of this merchandise that had just come into the store on the website. And Walter and one of our employees were working very hard to get many of those products on. And the other side of the coin is, okay, now people are going to have to find us on this, find this website. More people than just the ones that might know us or the ones that might Google enough times to find us. So digital advertising was important at that time. So we've tried a number of different things over the past year, but we started doing the digital advertising more. We started some regional push. We had some raincoats by our Norwegian vendor, Helly Hansen, and we thought, maybe people up in the north would like these because it was rainy in April. And so we used some of the digital placements for Bemidji, Brainerd, those kinds of places.
Northern Minnesota.
Yep.
Northern Minnesota, the Dakotas.
Yep.
Northern Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. It was interesting. We got some really good response out of that. But probably what really helped us the most, not only did we expand our digital advertising to reach more people, but one of our vendors, Helly Hansen, had developed some face mask. Now, Helly Hansen's never done medical equipment ever in their lives. They're known for all their rainwear, fall weather gear. If you're a blue water sailor, you own Helly Hansen storm suits, etc. They're what you basically bet your life on if you're out in deep water and sailing. So they're very good at protective clothing. Never done anything like this. They decided that, you know, here's a bunch of guys that haven't had anything to do. And it's like, let's just play around with the idea and let's make our own mask for our own use. And they did. Got one of the factories to run a small little thing. Don't know how they got people into the factory to do it, but they did develop these masks that they were going to use for internally. And then the World Health Organization came along and said, if you're making any sort of mask, send us some samples. They did. And then all of a sudden, there's this call from WHO, World Health, and they're saying, did you make these? And they're there going, well, yeah, we could stop, though. If we've done something wrong, just tell us. We don't normally make this.
That's very Norwegian.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and, you know, we've heard the story so many times from the Helly people that it's true. They really were very concerned that maybe they'd done something wrong. And
but in essence, they created a necessity.
Yes.
They did. They created something that WHO used and is still using for their frontline workers. It's the only mask on the market that's a commercial mask that is bidirectional protection. That means that there's protection from me speaking or breathing and from anybody in the room speaking or breathing so nothing comes through the mask. It has a wonderful filter in it that keeps everything out. It's antiviral and antibacterial, all these good things. And then the one kicker that makes it probably one of the most, you know, sought after mask is that it's extremely comfortable. They have a fabric that they call Leaf Aloft that they used for the inside. And it's one of their proprietary fabrics. And what it does is that it really moves any moisture or any buildup of moisture out away from your face right away, so that you don't have that kind of petri dish feeling as you're breathing. And also, you aren't fogging your glasses up and things like that easily, because it provides for really good breathability. We were offered this from them early on. They said, look, you're the only people in the U.S. that we know that would probably think this was a neat idea.
And
we'll give you an exclusive.
Yeah. Yes, and I think that was a real honor to us, because they knew that even though we were the small company, we had a niche of customers who may be interested in this and a need. First of all, living and working in a medical community, but also with our website and our customer base that may be interested in some this type of protection, and it's Norwegian. So they knew we could market it.
And you received the masks when? And then let's talk about the success of the yes. sales of these masks.
Well, the success is continuing daily. We received them probably the second week of March.
Yes, right.
Right, when the governor closed the state.
Yep, it was about the time we were
the first executive order.
Yeah. Right, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, very close to that same time, because we, I think, got them delivered to the house.
We may have. I believe so. And here we are with all of this merchandise from spring, the raincoats and the sweaters and whatnot. And now we've got several thousand dollars worth of masks. What are we going to do?
So what did you do?
We marketed them everywhere. We marketed them in the city of Rochester, and we were sending masks or having people pick them up because we were closed. And
well,
we
back then
them.
We didn't have curbside.
No, we didn't. There were a few people that walked by our front door.
Yeah. Yeah. But most, you know, 99.99% of the first ones, because we were essentially closed. We would come in every other day and process 40 to 50 or more orders for masks. And then all of a sudden people started shopping the rest of the site. And we just took off like crazy.
Well, I read 200% growth.
Over 200%. We almost hit 300.
Seriously, wow. That's remarkable.
Yeah.
And you talked a lot about the digital marketing aspect of it. Mm-hmm. How has that evolved just over the last couple of years? Because prior to 2020, your web presence had success. You had a good 2019 as well. So
you've really taken on
the digital marketing approach.
Yeah, we had started in 2019, thankfully. We had kind of looked at each other, because everybody was asking us at that point, you know, when are you going to retire? When are you going to do this? When are you going to do that? And we're there going, you know, we're still having a lot of fun. Let's see what we can do with the web. Because it was always a part of the store, and it was always an integral part of it. But we decided that we were going to start moving it to become its own individual, actually division, that would stand on its own. And so in 19, we started, and we put in an impressive 50% increase in sales, which with the volume that we'd been doing, that was huge. I mean, that was time to pop the corks and celebrate. And we did. All of our advisors, all of our banker and everything were just amazed that we could pull off something like that.
But I think the digital learning experience is still a learning experience. we learned that we were a niche business, and it's hard to communicate with some of the digital offerings that are put before us, because they have the whoever's placing the item for sale has to know that this is a very niche item. It's not something that everybody is going to check out our website on.
So we started playing around with different other avenues, working with some of the Scandinavian publications that existed, some of the Scandinavian events, advertising with them. And that gave us a much better return on our investment and started us down a path that we've been just branching out on, you know, every day and expanding, which was really, that's been very helpful for us. We also got a grant that was through RDA.
Rochester Downtown Alliance.
Right, mm-hmm. Yep. Early for $2,000 to help us work with a local business. We chose Tulip Tree because they have a very good marketing person who is good at marketing Google things. And we thought, well, let's go back and try it.
Some research I've done specifically in some articles on Forbes is they're really pushing the digital first for retail. Do you agree with that?
No, I think that it's a two-pronged thing, especially here in Rochester. We have a unique customer base here because of the Mayo Clinic Destination Medical Center phase that we're in right now, as far as Mayo's growth, is going to expand our market even more, which I never thought that there would actually be a word that would describe it, but the one that comes that keeps coming up always is medical tourism. And that seems to be on the rise. And even though we've taken a brief break due to COVID, I think Mayo is committed to that growth. And we're going to see that start up probably more towards the end of this year. And definitely you'll be able to see some very positive things in 2022, the first quarter.
And that being said, I think small niche retail, specialty retail is always going to be relevant if we who are in the business are doing it well and creating great service for our customers. Customers from all over the world and young and old respond to it very well. And the digital side is also the side that will enhance that experience.
How are you continuing to capitalize on the trend of finding one's roots in terms of the merchandise you're carrying? Are there some products that now seem to be more in demand? And as a result, is your customer profile changing?
Yeah.
Yes.
Very definitely.
First of all, our merchandise has changed dramatically over the years.
When we started back in 1974, we were 99% hard goods. Mm-hmm. Meaning things like dinnerware, flatware, glassware, gift items, things such as that. We sold lots of design items, and we had very little soft goods, very little sweaters. We had started with one little spiral rack that held, I think, 15 sweaters. And that was our first thing with soft goods. As we've progressed over the years, now we're at probably 80% soft goods in the store and 20% hard goods.
And I think that reflects what's happening as a trend here in the States and maybe in Europe as well. Our customers today are interested in experiences and things that will enhance those experiences. And that is where great coats for rain or bad weather, great sweaters for doing interviews or being on Zoom or just having a nice Saturday stroll are important and will enhance and help people's lives. That's a good reason why we have so many more soft goods, as Walter would say, instead of the hard goods.
And specifically the Dale of Norway sweaters. Your store is number one outside of Norway in the sale of
Actually, number one.
Number one, period. Yeah. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Tell us about these sweaters and the evolution of them becoming so popular for you.
You know, just over time, we started noticing that people were very interested in, you know, something that they could wear. And that was part of a little bit of their heritage. But slowly, we started to see that people were buying things like in our store. And we'd always known it. They're buying it because of design. They weren't Scandinavian. I mean, we have male guests from all over the world. They're not all Norwegian.
I think it's the design, the quality, and the authenticity that people are drawn to.
Right. Dale has been able to show, with a lot of help from us, I might say.
Yes.
We were the ones that got them in the early years to move away from just doing the same sweaters over and over again.
Bring some variety.
And they were selling. But there was no change in the collection, really. We got them to focus a little bit on changing the collection. Then we realized that, you know, the biggest comment that we had is that the sweaters were too heavy to wear. And, you know, they were heavy hand-knit sweaters. Great sweaters, but they were heavy. And this thing called central heating seems to be something that's catching on in our country. So, you know, you don't need that sweater that, you know, the further you got away from the cook stove, the better it felt.
So we encourage them to do lightweight sweaters. Yes. And more modern and contemporary designs, and even bring in some fashion colors once in a while.
Well, when you're the global leader in sales, they'll listen to you, right?
That's true. And we listen to our customers, and our employees listen to our customers. And I think that's very, very important.
You know, yeah. One of the things that we've been able to offer to Dale of Norway and to a few of our other vendors is the ability to measure a product in our store. Because we have a unique clientele, which is from everywhere. And it's a nice, good snapshot that you don't get anywhere else in the world. That has been kind of important to them. And they've learned from being in our store several times, many times, what it's like to be there. And, you know, all of a sudden there's a person from Spain, from France, from Saudi Arabia, from wherever. It is an international community. So that's been very good. And they've been, because we've had a lot of success with them, we drove them to do the first lightweight sweater and sold that out in no time at all. They produced it for us exclusively, thinking that, well, let the crazy Americans try it. You know, that's not
so
work.
Crazy.
And within 45 days, we were yelling and screaming for more sweaters. And it was like, well, that's impossible. And it's like, no, we've sold out. That was our beginning with them, to prove that we knew what we were doing.
Right. And understanding your customer.
Yes, yeah, that's true. And in 2018, we had some suggestions of designs. And they said, oh, okay, again, just show us what you're thinking and we'll kind of take a look. They actually took a serious look. We submitted a design, and just on paper, just a concept. And I said, I think this would sell for you. And this is a new look. It's a little longer sweater, and it's the type of thing that ladies want to wear right now with their leggings, and I think it'll go. And so we didn't really hear back from them. And then in the spring, when the new book came out, I said, oh, that's our sweater.
There's your design.
They made it without even telling us. So we ordered it and hoping it would sell. It did, and it has become one of their top five sellers.
Congratulations.
In the whole line.
Let's talk a little bit more about some of the changes you've experienced with your business and your client base, but also as longtime residents of Rochester, Minnesota, how has the community changed? You've seen a lot.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, the biggest change is that Rochester is getting younger. There are a lot more younger faces showing up, and they're young people that are working for Mayo or for affiliates of Mayo. And they bring a totally new vibe to Rochester, a very positive one. And it's really kind of interesting because as they started showing up, things like 23andMe and a bunch of the other, you know, genetic, you know, find your roots type things were starting to come out. All of a sudden, these people are finding that, oh my God, I have some Scandinavian blood in me. And so it's like, you know, they'll go back and they'll talk to mom and dad. And, you know, mom and dad really didn't pay attention when grandma was around for them, who really was the Scandinavian in the family. And then it's kind of trailed off and trailed off. And then all of a sudden, there's this rebirth of, well, where did I come from? This is really exciting. And especially, you know, the ones that we talk to are very excited about finding their Scandinavian roots because, you know, Scandinavia was and still is the forefront of a lot of things that young kids really, really identify with. In Scandinavia, it's always been fewer but nicer things. It's not a throwaway society at all. So you have a real respect for materials and for quality of things that are going to last you. And that's important to a younger customer, that whole idea of
sustainability.
Of sustainability.
Yes, it's very important.
Dale of Norway is proof of that. Here's a 141-year-old company that has always produced woolen products. They not only produce the sweaters that we sell, but they also have developed the sheep throughout the years to get the quality of yarn that they want. They've always been working with different types of ways to dye the yarn. Everything's done with natural dyes so that there's no caustic materials in them, which is really important. A Norwegian sweater is totally biodegradable. Very few people will end up actually doing that because they don't wear out, which is another good thing.
For the younger shopper, yeah, there is that sense of wanting retailers to have the sustainable products, as well as the social responsibility behind what they're selling.
Right.
That is true.
Something that I think has been always key with us is that our lifestyle is a Scandinavian lifestyle. We promote that way of living and have always done that. So they find it's very genuine when they come into the store. They like that. It's part of us.
Yeah, and many of our products are sustainably made, manufactured. Many of them are long-term companies that have learned how to use the dyes and the materials properly.
You're proof that couples can start a business together and succeed. Your 47 years as a Rochester retailer begs the question, when your spouse is your coworker, what agreement or understanding must firmly be in place in order to succeed? Who's going to answer?
We never had a formal agreement, but we both have shared a love for design and art, and specifically Scandinavian, over the years. Also knowing that we are on the same team. If we don't agree with how something is being done or or what someone is buying. At the end of the day, we know that person is doing it for the benefit of the business and of the team. And we just roll with that. And sometimes we're right, sometimes we're not.
We actually fit together extremely well. Louise is our detail person. I'm always our vision person. I'm the one that's out trying to figure out where we're going to be in 10 years, 20 years, what we need to do to continue our growth. And Louise is the one who's always trying to make sure that we're dotting our I's, crossing our T's, making sure we're kind of following through correctly and not missing things. Yeah. And that's always been our strength, is that where one person is not as strong, the other person is. So you get a very tight organization,
right,
that's very focused. Our focus has always been to provide the best quality Scandinavian design that we can. And we found out early that quality always pays. And we're kind of a tribute to our store, or the store is a tribute to us. We've always tried to compartmentalize what is the shop and what is Louise and Walter.
One final question, and I want you both to answer about each other. So Louise, what inspires you about Walter? And Walter, what inspires you about Louise? Louise, why don't you start?
Walter works very hard at learning new things all the time. He has always pushed us to have our computers and be digital and go forward and try new things, whether it's new merchandise, new equipment in the store, new programs on the computer. That's very inspiring. And I also love that he loves Scandinavian design and the functionality and the quality of it and the heritage of it.
Walter, what inspires you about Louise?
Louise is a never-ending source of creativity. She is the one, she's the artist out of the two of us. I might be the architect, but Louise is an artist, and she always has that new fresh idea, that new whatever it is. Many times it's a little out there, but you know, in time we usually come to a way of embracing that and moving forward. We really do complement each other very well. All of our vendors kind of realize that. They understand that we're there buying, that it's the two of us. And they're not playing to one or the other of us. They're, you know, it's both of us, and we both have to be happy. If we're not, it's not going to happen. Because if we don't both agree on it, it's probably not a good product. At least not for us.
Louise and Walter Hansen, this has been a fun conversation. Congratulations on all of your success. And thank you for being our guests on Urban Evolution.
Thank you so much. It's been
thank
an honor.
You.
Fun to be here. It's a great experience. Thank you.
And thank you for tuning in to Urban Evolution. More info about the podcast and our guests can be found at urbanevolutionpodcast.com. Be sure to subscribe. Urban Evolution is a production of Destination Medical Center Economic Development Agency. Learn more at dmc.mn. Stay safe and be well.